Welcome to the Midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland. Well, there's music in the air, not just on the radio, but in various venues around the state. And this Friday, that is to say tomorrow, there's going to be a performance by the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. This is the last of their Masterworks series for 2012 and 13, and the program will include Haydn's Hen, which is to say the Symphony No. 83, Beethoven's Second Symphony, which was surprisingly controversial in its day. There will also be music sung by Susanna Phillips, the beloved Songs of the Auvergne, some of them, by Joseph Canteloube, and then a couple of Mozart arias, and Susanna Phillips is here. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Welcome to the Midday. You are a performer who has worked under some unusual circumstances.
That's true. I believe the last time I was here, I was a rather unusual circumstance.
Yeah, we all had kind of the weather, the Wisconsin summer weather gave us kind of a rush from the outdoors to the indoors for a concert on the square.
I thought it was really fun, though, to see the arena packed as though it were an outdoor concert with people on blankets and it was with the food trucks. It was a fun night.
Brought everything but artificial turf.
Right.
And for this concert, you have some pieces. Well, the Canteloube is a big collection, I guess, those Songs of the Auvergne.
A very large collection. Canteloube was a self-described regionalist. He grew up in the Auvergne, and both of his families had a long lineage in that area of France.
It's kind of south-central France.
Exactly. And he fell in love with the sounds of that area, the folk songs and the different regional nature sounds of that area on walks with his father that he would take quite often. And so he decided to really focus on that area of the country. And nearly all the music that he produced has some kind of Auvergne nod. And he produced these incredible folk songs that he set. Some of them are originally folk songs, and some of them are stories that he set. For example, the second one we'll be doing tomorrow night is the Bailero, which is a shepherd's call. And it's, Canteloube actually heard this himself. He heard a shepherdess and a shepherd calling to each other across the valley and meeting up at the end. And he set that to one of the pieces. And
I think that's probably the most famous, that Bailero.
I think it is
the
most famous.
Usually placed first, I think, in recordings of the songs.
Oftentimes it is. It's beautiful. It's one of his most stunning pieces, and you can't sing it.
Nothing else exactly. I mean, the style. It's hard to kind of style. He wrote these from the mid 20s into the 1950s, I think.
Yes. I think it was between 1923 to 1930 was the last set. But then they orchestrated some of them later. But he really captured in that particular piece, really captured the sounds of nature and also the calling across the wind. He somehow got those colors together. It was pretty awesome.
Well, there's a great story behind one of those Mozarts, but before we get to that, as long as we're in France, we have from your CD, which is called Passage, Travels?
Landscapes.
Landscape, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a long time. These are performances of works by Debussy and Messiaen, and in this case, Gabriel Fauré. And you have four songs by Fauré in this set. And what is the first one referring to? Roses.
The Rose of Ispahan. And it's talking about it's kind of similar to the Canteloube we were just describing, talking about the scent of the roses. And the tastes of oranges and kind of remembering what it's like in Ispahan.
And the pianist here is Myra Huang. Well, Fauré was another of those composers who had a style all of his own. I think of him usually as being a very gentle, lyrical composer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He has wonderful melodies, and he never over-treats something. It's very simple but full.
Okay, now let me ask you kind of a personal question, Susanna.
Oh, dear.
You come from Alabama.
With a banjo on my knee. That's true.
Did you have to, what is the word, modify the way you speak when you got into music, or do you have
I never had a very, very strong Southern accent. Uh-huh. My father made sure that my mother didn't teach us certain words, like dog. I say dog. And
dog.
Most people where I come from say dog.
Yeah.
Things like that. But there are certain things that I can't shake, like the days of the week, for example. I say Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Uh-huh.
I say y'all all the time.
That's a good word. That's a useful word.
It's a very useful
because
word.
Because we've lost, ever since thou left the language, we've mm-hmm. lost that distinction between familiar and collective you.
And everybody needs that.
So now it's you versus y'all.
Exactly. For a big group, it's all y'all. So, yeah, and I never consciously lost it, but I also have one of those ears that I listen to the sounds of the way people speak, and I just kind of acclimate to that. I naturally kind of gravitate towards that, so.
Now you've played, let's see, Musetta.
Yes.
And
I sang Musetta here in Madison.
With the Madison Opera?
With the Madison uh-huh. Opera. It was my first job out of the Lyric Opera Chicago program, and I got to sing with a really wonderful group of people. It was and I had to have a dog. And the dog was the most unpredictable thing mm-hmm. about the whole thing.
Did that work out okay?
It worked out beautifully. The dog was wonderfully trained. I was very, very lucky. There are some people who say they'll never, ever work with two things, and that's dogs and children. Because they'll upstage you every time.
That's right.
And I'm sure the dog upstaged me because it might have been the cutest dog I've ever seen. But it was a lot of fun. We had a good time.
What part does the dog play in the opera?
Musetta's puppy, and she takes him everywhere she goes. So,
then you pretty much feel that's your role among roles. In other words, that's the one maybe that you feel closest to.
I don't know if it's the one I feel closest to, but it's certainly one that I've done a lot, and it's one that I really love to sing. I've sung it quite a few places, including the Metropolitan Opera, and I find it to be a wonderfully well-developed character in an opera that is one of the most beautiful operas ever written. So every time I get to sing it, I feel very, very lucky. I actually, to be honest with you, I kind of prefer it to the larger role of Mimi in that opera, mm-hmm. simply because you don't get all the pressure and you get all the fun.
Another potential for upstaging?
Well, you never know. You never know.
Meanwhile, back in these songs by Debussy and Fauré and Messiaen, the Debussy, you know, of course, he wrote a fair amount of songs.
He wrote quite a few songs. He did.
You don't hear them all that often, it seems to me. And what's the theme behind this set of six?
There's not really a theme behind them, and they're more connected. He had a vision of having them as a collection. They're all kind of mood music. He was. In a way, I find that's why it was not super, I find it rather difficult to program these pieces on a recital when you're standing up in front of people, because the way they communicate is orally. So in a way, playing them on the radio or listening to them in your car is actually the best way to listen to them, because it's all about the colors of the that he creates, rather than trying to communicate a specific story. That makes any sense.
Okay, and so let me make sure I have this right. So what's the advantage of radio versus live performance with these?
You're not distracted by anything visual.
Like the singer, you mean.
Right. Seriously, uh-huh. It's true. I mean, oftentimes when you're standing up in front of people, you feel like you feel the need to communicate a story visually as well as vocally.
Does this have something to do with your opera training, do you think?
Perhaps. I mean, we are some of the few instrumentalists who don't have music in front of us most of the time.
Yeah, good point.
So there's no fourth wall, and you feel like you need, and we also have words that we have to communicate. And most often they tell a story or they have some kind of sentiment to them. And you feel your face and your body and your breath needs to express what those words are visually as well as vocally, which is is a different perspective. And one way that I prefer to listen to these songs when I listen to other people sing them is to close my eyes, because it really, all you need in these songs is what happens vocally. You don't need the extra thing. And I find it rather distracting. So I'm glad that that to have these on some kind of disc so that you don't have to look at me.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. But as long as we have the disc, let's hear one of those six Debussy pieces. And which one is this?
This is Chevaux de Bois. And this is, at the beginning you'll notice, it's kind of interesting. It's talking about the actual title is Horses of Wood, which is a carousel going around and around. And at the end, everybody's had fun at the carousel, and they begin to walk home, and you look up and see the night sky in all its beauty.
Susanna Phillips, an accompanist, with the work of Claude Debussy, one of his many songs. And we'll hear one more from Susanna Phillips, and also the Mozart story that we promised. We'll get all of that in the next 7 minutes, going up to the quiz question here on WPR. Back with soprano Susanna Phillips, who's performing with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra in the last of their 2012-13 Masterworks Concerts, which is tomorrow night at Overture in the other, not the Overture, it's in the Capitol Theater. I keep wanting to say Oscar Mayer, that's the older term for it. And the program will include a couple of Mozart arias, one of which, we've said, has this fascinating story behind it. It's a story actually told by somebody you don't hear about very often at all, though he has a famous name, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart Jr. tells this story. There was one, and he tells a story about his father.
That's true. Mozart, when he wrote Don Giovanni, he worked on it, and it premiered in Prague. And when it premiered, he was staying with a lady named Josefa Dušek, who happened to be a very famous soprano of her time. He had already written Allo Previdi for her, I believe, and he was staying with her, and she had just heard Don Giovanni, and tomorrow night we'll be singing one of the arias from Don Giovanni, Non mi dir. But and she somehow got him into this pavilion and locked him inside with a pen and paper and said, I'm not going to let you out until you write me an aria that's equal to or greater than the quality of Non mi dir, which is Donna Anna's famous aria from Don Giovanni, and to the text of Bella mia fiamma a Dio, which is a kind of a famous story then. And so, you know, Mozart got to writing and got it all set up, and then he came out and held up the aria and said, I have this aria for you. However, you must sing it note perfect the first time you sing it through, or I will burn it and destroy it in front of you. And she did. She successfully sang it all the way through, because we have it today.
We can be glad.
But
one,
let me tell you,
clam and we wouldn't have this.
Exactly. I got to tell you, if I were the one he was saying that to, it would have been in the fire so fast.
Is it tough? It has a reputation.
It is a tough little song. I have to tell you, it's so beautiful. And then you get to this really kind of gnarly part of it, kind of towards the end, which is where she's expressing her pain, and it's really painful. But in a way, it's just so incredibly beautiful and thrilling. I love this piece. So
that'll be on the program tomorrow night, too. Mm-hmm. And it's only rarely recorded, I think.
Not many, hard to find. It's very hard to find. There are not many recordings of it. But who knows? Maybe once in the future. We'll see.
All right. Now, tell us about Olivier Messiaen.
I love Messiaen. I know so many people have not heard his music very much and are a little kind of afraid of it. It can be rather dissonant, but he had a fascination with nature, with religion, and with his first wife, whom he affectionately called Me. And he wrote these nine songs for her and as a wedding gift. In their collection called Poème pour Me, and he wrote the words and he wrote the music. And you can hear the influence of birdsong throughout, and you can hear the influence of his deep religious connection. In this piece we're going to play for you, Le Collier, which means the necklace, he's saying, you're standing across from me, and oh, my necklace, which is made of so many different things of beauty. And at the end, it's your two arms around my neck this morning, the day after they get married. It's a really wonderful sentiment, and I find it to be one of his more tonal and song and accessible songs. So I really hope that you are drawn in.
The work of Olivier Messiaen. Song about a necklace,
mm-hmm.
A couple of different kinds of necklaces, literal and more figurative, from Olivier Messiaen, and that's from a collection of nine songs
called the Poème pour Me.
He was a prolific 20th century composer and another of those who was an original.
Absolutely.
And the soprano there, my guest today, Susanna Phillips, with pianist Myra Huang. That's, by the way, from the Bridge CD, Passage, featuring music of Debussy, Fauré, and Messiaen. And a pleasure having you here. And you won't have to worry about the weather this time around. It's going to be indoors.
Exactly.
In the Capitol Theater.
Thank goodness, because it's raining outside.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good thing that we don't have that issue to deal with. So enjoy your visit to Wisconsin, even if it's mostly indoors.
I love it here. The cheese alone. Oh, my goodness.
What about the beer?
Oh, I haven't had a beer yet. That's going to happen after the concert tomorrow.
After the concert, yeah.
It'll be nice.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.